The Secrets of Technology is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to The Secrets of Technology. Hi, I'm Don Bettinelli, and you're listening to The Secrets of Technology, where we discuss the technology news that's important to you from a uniquely Catholic point of view. Joining me today on the panel are Father Corey Stika. Hi, Father Corey.
How's it going, Don?
Good. And Joanne Mercier. Hi, Joanne.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
Pretty good. Thank you. So today we've got a couple of good topics we want to talk about. For the first topic, I want to get right into it. It's the promise and the danger of surveillance. And what I mean is I want to jump off of this case that's local to both me and Joanne here in the Boston area. A couple weeks ago, this young woman was coming out of a bar. She'd gone out to with some friends to a bar in Boston and never made it home. And, they were looking for her. Long story short, they used the video cameras that they are placed throughout Boston and her iPhone to track her down to this particular apartment where they found her on Monday, where she was being held against her will. We don't have to get into the details of the particular kidnapping, as horrific as it is. And I'm glad she's okay now, but there are a couple things that come up as a result of this case. Things to mention. First, that throughout Boston, apparently there is a vast surveillance network. We've heard about similar ones in London and New York, but in Boston, there's a big surveillance network. Some of it went into place when we hosted the 2004 Democratic National Convention, and then more have been added. Many of them are from the Department of Transportation. Some of them are from our subway system. The police have a fewer of them, but they have access to all of them. And so some people are saying, well, this was a good result, what we had here, where this young woman was saved, but it does raise some privacy questions. And I'm wondering, first to start off with, what do you think about these surveillance networks? Is it a good thing? Is it good that we have cameras everywhere that police can access from a central hub? Or is it a bad thing? Or a little of column A, column B? Father Corey, can I start with you?
Sure. It's one of those things where something that is good and something that can be beneficial, I think there's also kind of that underlying darkness, if you will, that underlying concern about privacy. We know people who they do the little piece of tape over their web camera when they're not using it, or someone we know slides a little plaque over it.
I have that now.
I don't, but that's because most of the time you look at my web camera, you're going to see my back wall behind me.
Right.
You're not going to see anything. But there is concern about that. Many of us have seen the show Person of Interest, that's really kind of the theme of that show is this supercomputer is sitting there watching all these cameras throughout the country and it's finding people who are in trouble, and using logic and deduction, all that. Yeah, that's a nice topic. We're not quite there yet, but there are concerns that what if we end up with a police state? What if we end up with, all these what if? So I think it's ultimately a good thing, but it's something that we still need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, Joanne, what do you think?
I agree with Father Corey. It's good to have all of these things. And believe me, in Boston, if you've ever been through Boston, you need those traffic cameras because you need to know what's going on to try to avoid the traffic or to check on the weather or whatever. But watching the case since last week, it's been interesting because if they had not followed that sequence, they may not have found her in time.
Right.
So I'll liken it to what's going on in genealogy right now and DNA testing, where we're, they're using DNA samples from folks to find killers. If you're going to find a killer in my family, go for it. What I want to know is I want to be the one to sign off on it, which right now I do. So far I am doing it and saying, yes, this is a good thing. So there's a delicate balance here that has to be struck between using it for the good and having people use it against us and use it, you know, being, whether it be hackers, whether it be a police state, whether it be something like that.
Yeah, that's the one thing that keeps coming up is the question of transparency and accountability. Those two words throughout our society in all different ways these days, transparency and accountability. So like in Oakland, California, they have a privacy commission, an independent commission of citizens who oversee the police surveillance system there. We don't have anything like that in Boston, for example. I don't know if New York does, but Oakland, I think, is the sort of the pioneer on this. So, you know, while they, you always want to like look at the good that it can do, like 15 years ago, this young woman may never have been recovered in time.
No.
But today,
yeah, exactly,
because of these tools, we did. On the other hand, what happens when it's not about, well, like say the DNA example. Yeah. It's not so much about finding criminals, and then it's about finding genetic markers for disease so they can deny you insurance coverage. Yeah. Then we start getting into problems that these technologies are raising.
Exactly. That's why I tested with one specific company rather than the ones that are most popular right now.
Right.
Because I don't want it. I don't want my DNA used for those purposes. I'm using it strictly for genealogy. Now, I did put it on the site called GEDmatch. And GEDmatch, when all this started, said to us, if you want to opt out, do it now. And we'll put you in a separate place for just genealogy. Mm-hmm. I kept it. I said, no, go ahead. I mean, believe me, there've got to be a couple of shady people in my family. And if they do something, go for them.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it. But other people don't. I think as long as you ask, that's fine.
There's a couple of things I want to come back to maybe on a later episode about the DNA testing and genealogy and some of that stuff, the implications that raises. So I don't want to, I don't want to initially go into that today, but there's some interesting aspects to that.
Yeah. It does address the larger issue of, you know, security and privacy when it comes to these technologies. And, you know, going back to the cameras, you know, your traffic cameras and your street corner cameras and your security cameras at every office building and every house you're going to go by. I think there is a expectation that you're not going to have a lot of privacy out in the public. When you're in the public market, when you're out in the public streets, you've got a limited sense of privacy. At least you should. I know some people want to push that further, but the fact is you are out in public at that point. You know, but the question comes, you know, if I have a security camera in my house, can the police, do the police have the right to tap into it? Things like that might be more of a concern.
Now, we did get some listener feedback from our discussion last time on the Covington students. The Covington Catholic and that video and they raised the other part of this is that we're not talking, and you kind of touched on it, Father Corey, we're not just talking about like commercial camera systems or government owned camera systems, but or even being used by government. But what happens when everyone's got a video camera in their pocket now? Heather writes in, Heather Comstock, wrote in via email. She says, over and over on social media and sites like Yahoo with their news spinners to attract attention, there seems to be a constant stream of amateur videos posted and designed to engender outrage. What does that make the standard for behavior for people out in public? Absolute perfection in behavior, appearance, and demeanor? It's disturbing that pictures and videos of minors and others can be posted without permission.
Mm. Exactly.
And then organizations like the diocese or the school are under enormous pressure to react and support or condemn behaviors in these types of videos, which is what led to many Catholic organizations to speak out and then later have to apologize. Right. And then finally, she says, while the majority of us will move on to some new viral outrage, how long will these children be haunted by this? And so that's another aspect to this, which is the crowd surveillance, in a sense.
Well, there's a YouTube site that I follow, Mike the Cop. He's a police officer from the Detroit metro region. And he makes that point that the video does not tell the whole story. We've come to this mindset. If you watch a video, like, say, with the Covington Catholic kids, you know the whole story by watching this 20-second snippet. No, you don't. You know, you don't know the context. You don't know what happened, because you could take a video where, you know, maybe Dom and his kids are wrestling around, and you take one little snippet, and it looks like Dom's beating up his kids. But then right. you take the larger context and the kids are jumping on him and he's just pushing them away and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Typical dad kid activity.
Right.
But you can take that out of context and make it look like he's a bad dad. You know, so I mean, the videos that do get posted, they can be taken so badly out of context, but it's the video, so it shows everything. No, it doesn't.
Right.
No, it doesn't. And two things. One, if Google and Facebook don't know everything about us by now, you know, they're not going to find it out.
Right.
Just to go back to an earlier conversation. And two, have you noticed that the arts are copying real life, especially on God Friended Me and on Blue Bloods? They show people with cameras at different events. You know, if something happens, the cameras come out and everybody's filming it. So this is pretty much known that that's what's, you know, that's our news. And when we talked about, you know, old people spreading all that, you know, fake news, you can take any of that footage, alter it, and make it look real.
A related aspect of this is, like, remember back in 2003 after the bombing, the FBI released video footage of the bombers. And so you had these Reddit detectives and 4chan guys going through these videos and dissecting them and then identifying people like that guy's is going to be one of the bombers and that guy, and then hunting them down and doxing them and people getting harassed who had nothing to do with anything and ended up becoming victims. That's another thing to worry about.
Yeah. And that happened with the Covington Catholic kids, you know, the one kid that was standing in front of the Nathan Phillips. He was misidentified as another kid who goes to Covington Catholic, and all of a sudden their family started getting death threats and, you know, parents are going to lose your job. And he's planning to go. I can't remember what he's going for, something medical, I want to say, for college.
Oh, wow.
And they started threatening the colleges he was looking at. And I mean, and this kid wasn't even in D.C. He was still back in Covington, Kentucky. Right. He hadn't even gone on the trip, but he was being doxxed. He was being attacked. His future was being threatened. His life was being torn apart because he happened to look like this kid.
It's the danger of the surveillance society. It's not even the surveillance state per se, because that's part of the danger, the danger of the surveillance society. Joanne, you brought up earlier before we started something topical that was in the news. It's sort of related, but it can show the unintentional surveillance that can happen through bugs or other things. And you probably, if you're all plugged into tech media, you've heard Apple has reported a bug in FaceTime or it got publicized and Apple has responded. There's a group FaceTime, which is a new service they started last fall, which lets multiple people be on a call at once. There was a bug that if you started a call and then the other person didn't pick up, but you then added yourself again to the call for somehow, then it would automatically pick up the call and you could listen into what the other person was doing. That's a bad bug. I mean, nobody denies that.
Yes.
And certainly, it's hard to fault Apple just because there are bugs in things. I mean, the software, that's an unusual use case to say the least. And we find these things, to their credit, they shut down the group FaceTime service. You can still do individual face-to-face FaceTime. But they shut down the group FaceTime servers and they promised to fix that by the end of this week, which is coming up tomorrow. So we'll see. But I know a number of people who have, out of an abundance of caution, have turned off all FaceTime in their phones, even the face-to-face individual FaceTime, because maybe there might be another bug in there that Apple has to find. And so they're going to wait to turn it back on until Apple's fix is out. We'll see. But it does point to how we all have to be so on our toes all the time. And we have to rely on good, knowledgeable sources of information about these things so that we know that there's a real issue. The evening news is often your worst source for this sort of stuff, frankly, because they often get it wrong. But then what is really happening, really going on? That's one of the reasons to go back to, a little meta, why we're doing this is to help kind of cut through the baloney and get some actual good information out there. So the long story short is always update your software when it comes out, when there's security fixes. That's the big one.
And maybe it's just me, but my life must be so darn boring that if anybody tried to, you know, listen in on my life, they just go right to sleep. So I can't, I guess some of this for me is if you're cautious, if you're on top of things, you're going to hear about these things, you're going to take care of it for yourself. It's the people I feel bad for are the ones that don't update, don't listen to any of this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden they get caught in something that they, and then they get fearful. I've got my FaceTime shut off right now. If somebody wants to FaceTime me, they let me know until this, because I talk to a lot of people who don't, who are not up on this.
Right.
So I want them to be cautious too. But it, I guess you just got to, you just got to roll with it, I guess, right now. Technology just moves so fast. You got to roll with it.
Well, you know, and it's, I mean, I've got the FaceTime turned off on my phone. Oh, wait.
Yeah,
Android user, by the way. So I don't have FaceTime.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's good that Android never has bugs.
Really. Well, that's what I'm kind of gonna say is there are bugs, and you know, there have been comments about how all these services have backdoors to the NSA and FBI and CIA. Maybe they do. And by the way, hi to our CIA overlords. No, I'm kidding.
I love the NSA. You
listening right now. True.
Yeah, you know, it whether it does or not, you still have to take privacy into your own hands. And like it or not, if you're going to use this technology, you're going to have to do research on how you secure it. I did some network security before I entered the seminary. And, you know, just to see the attacks that were being done almost 20 years ago before the internet became anywhere as big as it is today.
So I think we've covered our first segment. Thank you both. That was a good discussion. I want to move quickly on to our second segment, where we're going to talk about the new robot workers, the new robot workforce. There's a couple of interesting stories that were in the news that are related. First is Amazon has these new blue delivery robots that they've deployed through Washington's Snohomish County. They have six of them, so not a lot of them. They call it Scout. It's very cute. And they move down sidewalks at a walking pace, bringing packages to homes Monday through Friday during daylight hours. And at first, they will be accompanied by an Amazon employee, etc. But you know, you see what the eventual idea is that these autonomous robots will be going to homes and delivering. Relatedly, George Mason University is offering food delivery robots as part of its meal plans, where students can use an app to order food and drinks from a handful of locations, like a pizza shop, a Starbucks, a Dunkin' Donuts, or the on-campus grocery store, and then have it delivered. Usually, the vehicles, I think, must be made by the same company because they look very similar.
They look very much
so similar. Those are the first two parts of the story, and there's a third story that I can bring in as we talk about it. But it's this interesting idea of where we're going to start having these, you know, robots in our neighborhoods, in our work areas, you know, down our city streets on a regular basis.
You know, who would have thought that this is where the autonomous vehicles movement would start out?
Right.
You know, we thought the next generation Uber, we thought the next generation, you know, for traveling across the country, being able to just hit a go button as you get on the interstate and just let the car drive. You know, that's what we thought. It's going to be home delivery.
Right. It's an incredibly difficult problem to solve, this home delivery thing, because it's not like it's in a warehouse where they can follow a known track. They got to deal with pedestrians and vehicles and trash and, well, if you're in this area, snow or, you know, or even things like gates and steps and that sort of thing. There's a lot of places, ways they got to overcome.
Yeah, I'm shaking my head at all this because as an older person, for me, I look forward to the next maybe decade of saying some of these things can be very useful for me as I get older and I'm not able to do certain things anymore. But what about college, getting your meals delivered by a robot? Come on, kid, get up off your butt and go to the dining hall.
I love the quote from one of the people involved in setting this up. With the hectic schedules that students lead, I'm like, come on.
What?
I'm not that far removed from college that I don't remember how sleeping in till late and staying up till all hours.
Yeah.
This is they're playing Fortnite and don't want to get up and go to the dining hall.
Exactly. And they don't want to go meet the Uber Eats guy.
And what's happening is that it's taking people away from social. It's doing two things. Yeah. It's cutting down on socializing, that one with the college, with the university, because mealtime for us was always social. You got together, you sat with your friends, you saw other people you didn't see all day. So you're losing the social aspect. Secondly, is it's really attacking the workforce because, you know, where do kids get their first job sometimes?
Right.
Delivering things. You know, or working in McDonald's or stuff like that. If you start automating all of that, now what are these people going to do?
I'm not so worried about this about the social aspect, because this is the sort of like the points sort of things, like where you're not going to get every meal this way, but you'll get like your pizza this way, or like your late night snacks. But your second point, you know, there's actually a decent point there. There's a third story about these new grocery store robots. And in fact, my local grocery store has them now. And they're these big 6 foot tall robots that they put these googly eyes on to make them less threatening. and right now, they don't do much except wander around and look for spills on the floor. And you think, well, what, you can't have some kid do that? Like, why? But there's this implication that this is a test bed for new technology to maybe down the line, they'll do more than just look for spills. They'll instead maybe restock shelves. And that has the unions, most grocery stores are unionized, a little worried. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we have the president of the UFCW, I'm not sure which union is, but it must cover supermarkets. He says the aggressive expansion of automation in grocery and retail stores is a direct threat to the millions of American workers who power these industries and the customers they serve. And while it's debatable, you know, whether let's put it this way. Some people will say, well, the horse and buggy whip manufacturers of America and the blacksmiths of America would have preferred that we not have automobiles. And that's one side of the argument. And the other side is, there is a dignity in labor, and we have to not take away everybody's job solely for the seeking of efficiency. So where do you think is the balance on this from your point of view?
You know, by the way, the UFCW is the United Food and Commercial Workers.
Thank you.
So, you know, I looked at the robot. I saw the picture of it, and it looks like a weapons platform from Star Trek or something. Like, you expect to see phasers shooting out of the
top
of it.
My kids would love that.
Instead of googly eyes. Yeah. You know, I could see this being a test bed to see, well, what happens if, you know, a lot of these grocery stores have the home delivery where an employee goes and picks, you know, you say, I need this, and an employee goes and grabs them and then sends them out for delivery. I could see that being the next step, where instead of an employee doing that, there's a robot with a little arm that reaches out and grab your can of beans and your package of meat and so on.
I don't know that I want a robot picking fruit for me or vegetables. I'd rather a human being
squish.
Yeah, exactly. No. Or just, you know, picking at random as opposed to picking. That's actually, I have to say, that's one of the reasons my wife and I, we don't do more of that sort of thing, because a random person, never mind a robot, may not have the same standards as I do when picking, you know, fruit or vegetables or that sort of stuff, you know, the produce or the meats or the breads. Like when I buy like a tomatoes, I look for the make sure there's no blemishes. I want my stuff. I don't have all that much money. I want my stuff to last, and I've got five kids to feed. It's expensive
now,
as it is.
To be contrarian to that, though, they could design robots that have sensors that could better tell how much more perfect that tomato is than you could with your human eye and touch.
Is it
and
in
so
the grocery
on.
Store's business to sell me only the best produce or all of their produce?
Yeah,
I think, gentlemen, we're taking the humanness out of all of this. And that's what, you know, I think robots, technology has its place, but I'm not sure this is one of them.
Yeah.
Because if I want to get really, I try not to get political here, but how many people are on welfare, okay, that could do something like this if the job was open to them? I think corporations are looking towards technology to solve all their problems, because then they don't have to deal with the human side of it.
Right.
Well, because the human side is messy. We know that. But if that happens, we're going to start creating a society of dumb down people.
Well, McDonald's
who right. can't even do yeah. the basics.
One of the things, like McDonald's has responded to the $15 an hour movement, where it's this movement of workers who want to be paid more than minimum wage. Mm-hmm. They want to be paid $15 an hour to work at McDonald's. They've responded by rolling out kiosks in their stores where you just go up and you oh, press yeah. the button and you can now order McDonald's from your app on your phone and drive mm-hmm. up and it will be right. brought out to your car. And yeah, corporate America is responding to some of these things. And some of it is there are fewer people available for those jobs in some cases. Mm-hmm. We are having a decline in available population in some worker levels. But you're right. There is that danger where we would remove the human element from too many positions. There are some things that are just right. drudgery that, you know, like dangerous jobs or other things like that. But there are other jobs that maybe it'd be better for us to have. I like to think of like in Italy, in Rome, if you go to a restaurant in Rome or anywhere in Italy, the waiters are not people who are doing this until they get a better job. It's a mm-hmm. career. They get paid mm-hmm. like it's a career. They treat it like it's a career. They put you know extra effort into it like it's their calling in life, and going out to a restaurant in Italy is far superior mm-hmm. to most restaurant experiences in America. Just have to say.
Well, and let me just use a small story. When my very first job after I got out of high school was folding, bagging, and cutting curtains in a factory for 9 months.
Yep.
I did that for 9 months, and boy, did I want to get out of there and start my college career. But it taught me a discipline. It taught mm-hmm. me how to come to work every day, to leave work, to do my job while I was there, to, you know, it taught me all those skills. If we're not putting people in human positions to do these kinds of things, then right. they lose the, where are they going to get those skills to do better job in their chosen career later on? You know, I just think taking the humanness out of a lot of this is going to cause problems later on down the road. That's just
well,
my opinion.
You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but a lot of this technological advance is inevitable. It's going right. to happen. We're going to have apps. We're going to have robots. We're going to have them doing tasks that normally are being done now. You know, you go to that McDonald's where they've got the kiosks. They still got people cooking the food. They still got people handing you the food. So, I mean, it's
right. But
yeah, for now. Well, that's just it. I mean, there are people working on robot hamburger right. cookers, basically.
Of course, that does open up the possibility that, like, these places that will still have the human touch, and we have that now. You can go to a burger place where it's the human touch. No, of course, you're going to pay more.
Right.
So there's a little of that.
But, you know, but there's it's also a wider conversation about, you know, like high school students. Are they being encouraged to have, you know, their typical minimum wage burger flipping job, but then as a springboard to move on to other right. things, you know? And I think that that's a larger conversation that's going on in our country right now.
Yeah.
Is that's not happening.
Right. There's a value in learning a work ethic. And that kind of goes beyond the technology. But there's a principle in Catholic teaching on the value of human work. There's a dignity to human work
right.
that we have to respect.
There is.
We do it more than just to make money
right.
to feed our family. We do it because it's a good and we were created.
And it's a service to others. It's our service to others.
Excellent. Thank you. That's a great discussion. So let's move on to our last segment where we will discuss our picks of the week. Now, I hope you all have a pick of the week again this week.
Yes.
Father Corey, why don't you go first this time?
Okay, so mine is actually something that's been out for a few years. It came out about the time of the original Google Pixel phone. Again, I'm going back to Google.
Good.
I'm in
that's
the Google
why you're
market.
Here.
I'm in the Google world. And it's something that I've had and I kind of played with for a while and forgot about. And I'm holding it up for them to see. It's called Daydream View, Google Daydream View. It's their VR headset.
Geez.
And it works with the Pixels, Pixel phones, Pixel lines. You put the Pixel phone in the front of it, and the Pixel phone is actually your computer
right.
for it. It's not like some of the newer ones out there where they're the Oculus Rift or something like that.
Self-contained, yeah.
But you got the this uses your phone as the again the Pixel phone as the computer for it and the display and everything, and it does a great job. And then it's got little handheld thing where you, you know, trackpad and the whole works. It's a lot of fun. I was just playing. The reason why I picked it, because I've been playing, was playing with it a couple of days ago. And it's so much fun to watch, you know, the 3D videos where you're flying over Victoria Falls in Africa and all of a sudden it just drops off below you. And, you know, and the star, I've got, you know, a star program where you can look around. And as you look, it shows you the stars that you would be seeing if you were outside at night at that moment. And,
well, the nice it's thing, a lot of because fun. It's been out there a while, it's probably easy, you know, available, accessible, and probably not too expensive for folks who want to try it out.
Exactly. It, you know, and again, because this is not really the only thing that's electronic is the little hand, the little wand, if you want to call right. it that, the little pod that you use to control it. The actual unit itself is just, you know, nice cloth and mirror or lenses for the phone. And that's about
excellent.
It. And plastic.
Cool. Joanne, do you have something for us this week?
Oh, yes. And since I'd have vertigo from something like that, definitely. I have chosen the Duet Display. It's an app for to be able to use your iPad or your iPhone as an extended display. Since I'm in my office this my work office this week and I am bandwidth challenged, I needed a second display, so I pulled it up. And it's really great because it was built by a couple of ex-Apple engineers so that you could put your, and right now it looks like a little tiny screen with one of my windows on it so that I could read the show notes. It's easy to use. You can use it on either Mac or PC if you happen to have an iPhone or an iPad. And you can use it in two ways. You can either mirror what's on your screen so that somebody else can see it, or you can use it as a second screen so that you can put things there and read and work on them. So I highly recommend for all those people who want to do more than one display, the Duet Display.
Excellent. Yeah, I've used it myself in the past. I don't have as much use for it right now just because I have an iMac in front of me, 27-inch, and a 27-inch high-def monitor to the left of it. So I don't have as much use for it. But when I'm right. on the road, in fact, it was 2 summers ago, Father Corey, you and I were doing a podcast, and I was doing it remotely from a cottage in Maine.
And I had
my laptop and my Duet Display next to me because you just that little extra screen real estate. As I always say, you can never have too much screen real estate. So I agree.
Yeah, no
that's
kidding.
That's a good one. So my pick this week is not an app. It's more of a tip, and that is both iPhone and Android have the ability to have an emergency medical ID set up on your phone. And I'll include links in the show notes to both. It's in the health app on the iOS. That's what I'm familiar with. But Android, since Android N also lets you add personal emergency information to your lock screen. And this lets, like, if a paramedic or a doctor, and they're now being trained to look for this, by the way, if you're in a situation where you can't communicate, they can open it up and they can get your emergency contact info. You can put in your medications in there. And one of the things that I do is there's a notes field, and I put in a note that says, "I am a Catholic. Please call a Catholic priest."
I have the same right. thing.
That way, if I'm ever in a situation where I need anointing the sick, they can they know to do that. And in the past, people have had medals or wristbands or that sort of thing where the same information. But this is everybody's going to have their phone on them. This is they're trained to look for it. So I'll put links to a couple articles in show notes that show you exactly how to do that. But I'm suggesting this for everyone listening, whether you're Catholic or not. Everyone should do this, no matter how old you are, what age you are. You should have this. It's a good safety protocol. So I think that's it. Before we sign off, I do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Secrets of Technology. And today, especially, we want to thank by name AJ N, Jenny N, Thomas Z, Laura B, and Matt and Yolanda C. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Technology and all the shows we do at sqpn.com, and you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. What do you think of our discussion and the things we had to say about our topics? Let us know by visiting sqpn.com/technology or the SQPN Facebook page and leave us some feedback or send an email to technology@sqpn.com. excuse me, all this talking, you can find relevant links for our discussion on our show notes at sqpn.com. Remember to like each episode of Secrets of Technology on the SQPN Facebook page. Retweet them on Twitter, where we're at SQPN. Leave us comments. Subscribe to the show if you have not yet subscribed in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or YouTube, where you should hit the bell to get notifications of new episodes. Please write a review in iTunes or one of the podcast directories. That helps us get noticed in the rankings, and people, when they look for us, they'll see your glowing review and want to subscribe. And above all, share the podcast with your friends. Help us grow our community and reach more listeners. Until next time, Joanne Mercier, thank you for joining me in sharing the secrets of technology.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
And Father Corey Stika, thank you as well.
Always glad to be here.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Technology on StarQuest.